When Abraham Lincoln walked home at 2 a.m. after learning of his election victory in November 1860, he was heard murmuring, "God help me, God help me." His premonition proved justified. Within months, America would plunge into its bloodiest conflict, claiming over 750,000 lives. What transformed political disagreement into catastrophic war? The answer lies in a perfect storm of miscalculation, honor culture, and the moral contradiction at America's heart, slavery. As the nation careened toward disaster, a lonely fort in Charleston Harbor became the unlikely focal point where America's fate would be decided. Lincoln's election, with just 40% of the popular vote and barely 1% in southern states, triggered immediate crisis. Despite his repeated assurances that he wouldn't interfere with slavery where it existed, Southerners viewed his victory as an existential threat. Within days, South Carolina officials began resigning federal positions and secession machinery cranked into motion. Why such extreme reaction? The fundamental issue wasn't just Lincoln's policies, but what he represented: Northern moral condemnation of slavery. If slavery was evil, then Southern gentlemen were moral criminals. This clash created a chasm no compromise could bridge. As one Southern planter bluntly told his Northern friend, "You think our system evil, a sin. We think the same of yours, but while we don't trouble ourselves about yours, you make war on ours, in which we see no evil, no sin, and nothing but good." Major Robert Anderson, a 55-year-old Kentuckian and former slave owner but loyal soldier, secretly relocated his command from Fort Moultrie to the more defensible Fort Sumter in Charleston Harbor on December 26, 1860. This tactical move escalated a local dispute into a national crisis. South Carolina officials viewed it as aggression, while President Buchanan was horrified. Fort Sumter, a massive brick pentagon surrounded by water, became the nation's focal point. As Anderson's 75 men fortified their position, South Carolina militia seized other federal properties and positioned artillery targeting the fort. Anderson faced an impossible choice: surrender federal property or trigger civil war. Wealthy planters like James Henry Hammond and Edmund Ruffin spent decades crafting justifications for slavery and secession, ultimately driving the South toward catastrophe. Hammond, who acquired his wealth through marriage to a 15-year-old heiress, ruled his plantation with absolute dominance and proclaimed in Congress that slavery was the greatest blessing and enslaved people the happiest, most contented race upon the face of the earth. The more radical Ruffin was galvanized by John Brown's raid, believing it would stir the sluggish blood of the South. After Lincoln's election, he rushed to South Carolina, convinced it alone possessed the resolve to act. In Columbia, he received celebration while the legislature approved a secession convention. These men actively undermined compromise, exemplifying the South's honor culture, where perceived insults demanded response and compromise indicated weakness. To them, Lincoln's election represented an intolerable challenge to their way of life and self-image as benevolent masters. As the crisis unfolded, President James Buchanan proved woefully unprepared. "It is very unfair," he complained, "that he couldn't finish my term of office in peace at my time of life," a self-pitying attitude that characterized his approach to America's greatest crisis. When Anderson moved to Fort Sumter, Buchanan's cabinet fractured. Treasury Secretary Howell Cobb resigned to support Georgia's secession, while Secretary of State Lewis Cass quit over Buchanan's inaction, observing, "The people in the South are mad, the people in the North asleep, the president is pale with fear." By January 1861, Buchanan had essentially abdicated responsibility, claiming the crisis was entirely above and beyond executive control. Though he asserted a federal right to use force against those attacking federal property, he took no action when South Carolina seized federal arsenals and forts. Lincoln's journey to Washington began February 11, 1861, with a poignant farewell at Springfield's train depot. "Today I leave you. I go to assume a task more difficult than that which devolved upon General Washington." After surviving an assassination plot, Lincoln faced his first crisis, Fort Sumter. On his first day in office, Lincoln received Major Anderson's report on resources needed to defend against Confederate attack. General Winfield Scott concluded, "I see no alternative but a surrender." Despite cabinet opposition to reinforcement, Lincoln felt surrendering Sumter would be utterly ruinous to the Union cause. Lincoln adopted Gustavus Fox's plan for a smaller expedition to resupply Fort Sumter with food provisions only, not military reinforcements, unless they encountered resistance. After Fox confirmed the fort could hold until April 15th, Lincoln moved forward with this compromise. Neither side was satisfied. Secretary Seward had misled Confederate commissioners about evacuation while Lincoln deliberated. When Lincoln informed South Carolina's Governor Pickens of the resupply mission, Confederate Secretary of War Walker responded firmly, "Under no circumstances are you to allow provisions to be sent to Fort Sumter." At 4:30 a.m. on April 12, 1861, a signal mortar at Fort Johnson fired, its shell rising like the wings of a firefly. Edmund Ruffin, at 67, fired one of the first shots toward Sumter. Inside, Private Thompson described the thrill that ran through our veins as shells arrived from multiple directions. After 2 hours of bombardment, Anderson finally ordered return fire. Though Sumter's most powerful guns were on the exposed parapet, Anderson restricted their use to protect his men. Confederate guns pounded relentlessly, with mortar shells arcing down and shaking the fort like an earthquake. By Saturday morning, Confederate gunners had improved their aim. A mortar shell burst through the officers' quarters roof, igniting a fire that threatened the main magazine with 30,000 pounds of gunpowder. Dense smoke forced men to the ground, gasping for air. With Sumter burning and supplies exhausted, Anderson surrendered. During the flag salute, an accidental explosion killed Private Daniel Huff and mortally wounded Private Edward Galloway, the first Civil War casualties. Lincoln's call for 75,000 troops prompted four more states to secede. The war would claim 750,000 American lives over 4 years, with South Carolina losing 21,000 men, over a third of its fighting population. 4 years after the first shots, on April 14, 1865, Robert Anderson raised the American flag over Fort Sumter in a ceremony arranged by President Lincoln. That night, Anderson toasted Lincoln, unaware the president lay dying from an assassin's bullet. The Fort Sumter crisis forced America to confront slavery beyond property disputes or states' rights. Despite later attempts to reframe the Civil War, Confederate Vice President Alexander Stephens had been clear, "Our new government's cornerstone rests upon the great truth that the Negro is not equal to the white man, that slavery is his natural condition." What began with miscalculation ended in national transformation. Fort Sumter reminds us how quickly democracy can unravel when compromise fails and extremism prevails, a warning that resonates today.